All right, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant.
Snack time! We need the yelling guy that every podcast does. I'm drinking beer and yelling! I'll be that guy for the show.
I'll be the really laid-back, like Connelly Woods type, you know, just hanging out.
Nicely done. I love lightning bolts! And so on.
Art flavor!
So this week we're covering art, that flavor, and Ant, what's the first thing we're doing? What are we doing today?
Well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce myself.
Yeah, do that. Who are you?
So I am Ant. I am a writer of flavor text and naming for Wizards of the Coast and also a article writer for Gathering Magic.
Awesome. Ant's last name is Tessitore. It's complicated, like my last name, which is Linneman. It rhymes with cinnamon. Famous interview I gave back in high school is because I got flavor. I am a writer for Gathering Magic and a former art director for the gaming industry, and also I've written flavor text in the past, but I am really terrible at it. I'll admit I suck. So that's two of us, Gathering Magic writers. You know how we do. Post every Wednesday or Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. And if you've seen our first couple things, we always start off with a flavorful gem. And I'm covering this first. And since this week we're talking about art.
Yes, this is the art week.
This is the art week. I'm going to be covering a new best of artwork. It's called Pyxis of Pandemonium. It's by Dave Palumbo. And while this piece is for a card that is okay, it might have some upside in the future, it is one of the artworks that made it into Spectrum 21. And Spectrum is an art annual of fantastical art, sci-fi fantasy art, made once a year, and it made it in there, submitted under Magic. And why this piece is so fantastic, in my mind, is that I often have yelled in the past about how the art needs to stand by itself. If you remove the card frame, remove the mechanics, casting costs, if the art isn't good and can tell you what it does, it has failed. And this piece by itself, when you see it, says, oh, this opening box, fire thing, oh, I understand the demons behind it. Oh, this is Pandora. She's opening Pandora's box. Terrible things are happening. Ah, I totally get it. Which not only fits into the theme of the entire set of the Theros block, but also talks about exiling cards of your library, and then when you blow this thing up, all of them come in back out. Just so, like, everything is left out when Pandora opened her box, leaving only hope inside. So by itself, it is just a wonderful piece showing a Greek mythological story, and with the card art, it deepens the flavor there. This is an absolute A-plus home run by Dave Palumbo, one of the Palumbo brothers.
Yeah, I love the fact that this entire art just tells its own story. Like, you look at it and you know exactly what's going on.
Exactly, and you can say, oh, I can stand alone. How is this important? Why is this magic? And then you look at the card and you're like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. I think a similar thing can be said about seeing the art Worst Fears. It's a massive 8-drop sorcery, black sorcery spell, saying you get to control target player during their next turn, and then you exile a card. That artwork has this similar deep storyline implication of what is going on here. But once you see the card, you're like, oh, this is a storyline significant thing, a seminal moment. Cool, I get it. And its strong usage of lights and darks are just great in that example. But, of course, Worst Fears has to be digital. Thanks, Eric Disham.
Sure. Yeah, Worst Fears is cool because it's one of those rare cards where it's almost monochromatic.
Like, yeah, it is.
And it still is it's such a powerful image, like, and it's so fitting for the card that it's on. But, I love when an artist is able to get that much depth and that much, like, feeling out of something without, you know, bombarding you with a million colors.
All the colors! Yeah, no kidding. I feel you. I like that when there's a spot of it. That's enough, and that's all I need. So, Ant, what's yours this week? What are you feeling?
All right, so my flavor gem is also a piece of art that made it in the Spectrum this year. It's on the community design card, Waste Not. you know, me being the flavor guy, I wanted to talk about the art description for this card because I remember when it got posted to Daily MTG a while ago when we were all voting on, you know, which art description we wanted and what was going to be used for the card. And this one always stuck out to me, and I was really hoping that it came through, and so I was happy when I saw the final result. The art description says, we see a ragman, hunched and withered, humanoid figure who appears to be held together by frayed ropes and worn leather straps. Being is standing triumphantly atop a heap of bones, broken armor, and weapons, and other unidentifiable trash. He's holding a skull in his hand, the other hand clutching a filthy sack that is bulging with quote-unquote treasures, and there's a purplish glow about him signifying his skill. The focus is on this glowing figure, and the mood is creepy, yet eco-friendly.
Awesome.
And if you look at this art, I mean, Matt Stewart just, he nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. It's perfect. The background is perfect. Like, I want to know so badly what plane this dude is on. Like, I have no idea where he's from. It doesn't look like it's from any world that we've seen recently, but I'm totally drawn in by this piece.
I mean, this piece is just so, so strong. I mean, Matt Stewart is able to make fantastic things constantly, and it's actually a really hard piece to draw, that foreshortened arm that leaps forward. That is so difficult to paint, especially traditionally, to get it right on the first try, to have great sketch work. We saw the sketches in the community, and every single one would have worked fantastic. And you just give someone to, like, Matt, an expert-level artist, and say, yeah, just do this, go ahead with it, and you know it's going to be perfect. You don't have to worry about it. That's such a cool, cool commission to get. A-plus on that. So
Mike, all these pieces that we've talked about so far, they're all in Spectrum 21, right? So,
yep.
So why is it so special for an artist to get something submitted into that annual book?
Okay, so Spectrum is this... It's a once a year, you can submit art through this January to get entered into this book. And who chooses who gets in there is a community of peers. And it changes each year. There's a jury, and it's art directors, long-established artists, people like Todd Lockwood, people like John Shindahedi, the former D&D art director. I mean, very, very significant people in the field that are judge and jury for this. And by getting into this book, because you have to not only put your own money down, and God knows you're not going to submit just one piece of work, you're probably going to submit a few, you're probably going to drop $100 or more to get nothing. To get in there is a signifying point in your career. Often it's compared to getting your first Magic card if you want to go in that direction of fantastic art, okay, of you've made it.
So you said that it's judged by their peers, basically, right? It's known artists from that community. So is it, as an analogy, is that the same as, say, like an actor winning an Oscar?
This would be very similar to that. Okay. While it is only people who opt into it, the community is small. There's a lot of it's predominantly American, but there's a couple Croatian artists, Philip Berberin, for example, who's been making a lot of great art, got in there and just blew things up, saying, hey, we have an Eastern European scene, let me bring a little bit of that flavor in, which had a little bit of fairy tales, almost grim feeling, grittiness in. So each year it's different. Each year the feeling of the book is a little different. There's sections in which there's book covers, editorial pieces, unpublished, which is the best stuff, obviously, because that's anything they'd like, and then the institutional, which is Magic. This year, they have a write-up at the beginning, and Magic wasn't mentioned. It was institutional art had a great year this year, including work by these art directors, but they didn't mention Magic. And often in these art annuals, these art exhibitions, these fantastic gatherings, it's this is fantasy, this is fantastic art or imaginative realism instead of saying fantasy art. The difference is an uppercase A of imaginative realism art to fantasy art, lowercase A. So you even weave it within us to say, well, this Magic art is so great. Even at Spectrum, they'll say, okay, yeah, it's great, but I want to see the person that made dragons 15 years ago and is now doing painting commissions for Peter Jackson of Lord of the Rings in his home. So you see this level of people breaking into the field, and you see people that are so incredibly talented that have honed their craft in there as well. I think it's a fantastic book. I buy them every year, and they just came out. It's on Amazon. It's super cheap. And to commemorate this, every May there is a art convention in Kansas City, and this is the place where you get all your signatures. You get
Spectrum
your prints.
Right?
Spectrum Live, yep. Yeah. It's always the same weekend as the Grand Prix in Minneapolis, guaranteed. And you get signatures there. You get sketch artist proofs. You get the new foil artist proofs because there's so many artists there. Think of going to the biggest GP with the most amount of artists. Multiply by 10, and there's only one or two people in line at a time. That's what Spectrum is. I mean, for the people that went to the Grand Prix with John Avon and there was cut off and they closed the door and the line took an hour, Rebecca Gay. Here, there's two people in line. Maybe one. And you get to talk to Steve Argyle all day, and maybe you want to get a beer with Dan Scott Giddy at barbecue after. And you can. It's the coolest thing because it's in the center of the country and it's harder for people to get to.
So if you're a fan of magic art and you want to meet the artist, Spectrum Live is where you want to be.
It's absolutely the way to be. I will be there. I usually bring a small contingent of people with me. Sometimes there's magic tournaments that are so kind, loosely affiliated with it. A tournament organizer should be getting a hold of us soon to get it all sorted. And that's about it. I mean, it's pretty fantastic. Oh. So I'm stealing your mojo here. And I want to talk about, in this book, there is digital and traditional artwork. And to many of our viewers that say, I hate digital, traditional is so much better. And I'm going to ask you, Ant, what do you prefer?
So, I mean, it's tough for me. I have dabbled in oil painting myself for a while. Like, I'm good enough to a degree where I could sit down and paint and be happy with it. So
you could do a color wheel, no problem. I get you.
Yes, I could. I can paint stick figures.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Occasionally, I'll put a hat on one of them.
There you go. No.
I like to, in my free time, I like to paint and do some oil painting and stuff. So I'm a sucker for traditional media. That might just be because when I've tried the digital realm and it was just too jarring for me because I like the feel of a sketch pad and I like the feel of, you know, getting paint on my fingers and just getting dirty with it. But I don't know. I just like a predisposition to more traditional media.
All right. Well, if that's your flavorful poison, your vial of poison, if you will, nailed it. What is your favorite looking set?
Favorite looking set?
Mm-hmm.
That is tough.
I'm putting you on the spot right now.
Putting me on the spot big time.
I'll go with mine and give you a half second.
All right. Give me a minute to think.
My favorite one is probably Lorwyn. I first said Mirage, and I own Art of Mirage on my wall. And while Mirage has a near and dear place to my heart, and it's very wonderful, I really like Lorwyn because it forced itself to the edge of a watercolor, bright Steve Prescott taking himself to the max with his color palette. They added purples and everything. The fairies were light and ethereal, whereas the fire elementals and flamekin were solid, sturdy, and heavy with color. I loved that set. I didn't all like all the mechanics and how annoying fairy decks got, but I liked how it looked because it was so different, even if I disagreed with how playful and child-friendly a lot of the art was.
It's funny you mentioned Mirage because that was one of the sets that for me came to mind almost right away when I was trying to think of which look and which feel I really used to enjoy.
Right.
And I think one of the cards that really made me think about that was actually in Cons. It was, I believe it's called Rite of the Serpent. I think that's what it is. It's a black removal spell.
Yeah.
It has a picture of a guy with like a crazy headdress on. He's holding a dagger and there's like a dead body with snakes coming out of it.
Seth McKinnon, he does weird conceptual.
Yes,
oh yeah, he's real good at it.
That to me felt like it came out of that era of Magic.
Right.
And I love those artworks, like old Therese Nelson stuff. Like that to me, I would say maybe Mirage, some Urza's Saga was definitely in the vein of things that I really enjoyed.
Okay,
I'm a huge RK Post fan also. So anything that he's done.
You like Randy's work, okay.
I love Randy's work.
Okay, well, you probably like when he worked traditionally, when he made all the angels.
Yes, especially Lightning Angel.
Well, I feel that. You made a ton of them. So, it's interesting that you talk about that, that was in the past. That's such a strange thing. I like hearing people say, what was your favorite set? And people say Mirage a lot because it was so painterly and so different. Very rarely do people say more recent sets. I like the way Innistrad feel. I loved the light of Pharos. I like the familiarity of Ravnica. Or I didn't like Larwyn, but I know people who did. And this goes in pendulum swings. I mean, it's a big thing with style guides to really shift back and forth which way more traditional, more digital, more light, more darks. And currently, luckily to everyone, we are swinging in the direction of traditional paintings hard. I mean, really hard. And when did you start playing again after you took a break, as we all have?
So I took a break after Mirrodin, and I came back in Time Spiral.
Okay, so you were right in that point when we were jacking up into the digital heavy. So from that, it was, oh, we get Larwyn, sweet. And that was kind of the severing point
Right.
of traditional. Then we went into a Shards of Alara, which felt a little digital, but there was some Donato, cool. And then that culminated with New Phyrexia, which was digital plastic everywhere.
Right. Which was fitting. I actually, to be honest, I really did not like Lorwyn at all. Like from a, I was not a fan of the whole, like, it just felt like a child, like a children's book. I don't
It
know,
was
like
that intentional.
I just did not, that to me was not magic. Especially like the magic that I grew up on and and when I was really, really into it was the Beatdown box set when it had, you know, Urnam Dinjin and Sengir Vampire like fighting each other to the death on the side, and Invasion with like was it Sam Wood? He had these crazy Phyrexian like paintings in there that were unbelievable. And then I come back to the game, Time Spiral was right up my alley because it was just nostalgia, and
And
it
then break
broke,
everything.
right? Yeah, and it broke everything. Everything exploded, and then all of a sudden, Lorwyn was like hitting people in the head with fish, and I was like, "What is this?
What
Stealing
is
pies?" I was like, "Get out of here!"
And then it went into Shadowmoor and Eventide
Yes,
that were
and it got
and like
better, and
back
then
to
all of a sudden,
match.
we went to New Phyrexia, and I was like, "I'm sold. I'm here forever. Like, I'm never leaving ever again."
It's almost like we started with a first-person shooter and we went straight into like super God of War sort of dark blackness, black on black, you know, how black is it? None more black. And now we're swinging back into, oh, there are warriors that are not our traditional perspective. Oh, we have different races represented. Oh, there's more women characterized. Oh, there's more painted things. And I think they're getting to the point where we have to swing back and forth where we sit, but at the same time, every time we do so, we integrate some new flavorful elements in. And the best example I have of this is an artist named D. Alexandre Gregory. Everyone knows this artist. He's done Jace, Memory Adept, he's done Nicol Bolas, he's done Teferi. He's done so many artworks over the years that if you see his artwork, it's hard to place him because it all looks so different. He's done almost 100 pieces, but the visually what it looks like shows how style guides have changed. If you look at the Mirage card, Final Fortune, 2 red, take another turn, you lose the game at the end of that turn. It is high painted, very conceptual. There's no background at all, and it feels like painted. It looks like a fine artwork. And then you go a little later into Belby's armor, where it still feels painted, but it feels like more fantasy art. It feels like it's more has purpose, and there's reasoning behind the armor and why things are the way they are.
Right. Final Fortune looks like a museum piece, and Belby's armor looks like it was painted for a game.
It was painted for something. It had a
Right.
purpose. And they kept along this path. There's an art called Deconstruct that still has some of that feeling to it. But you'll notice elements like the elf's ears and the headdress are so particular, they feel style guide oriented
Right.
to the point that this could be digitally touched up in a few areas. And his next piece, Teferi, or the next in the style guide, sort of various, Teferi Major of the Elfir. And you can really see, oh, it still has that painterly quality, but all the details are tightened. I can see his face clearly. I can see elements of it. His anatomy is more solid. Things are clearer. And that moved into Nicol Bolas, which is high painter background, but it's tight. It's a very tight depiction. And then we moved into the digital with Jace Memory Adept. That looks like a cartoon. It looks like an anime figure that came right out of some Saturday morning cartoon show. And this is with the same artist. And it just shows how much the art changes year by year simply by saying, oh, I need it to look more like this, not like that. Can you do that? And the people and a good artist can.
They can do it. And they will. And I find that really interesting because it's kind of like, you know, growing up when you had art class as a kid, you learned about like Picasso and how he went through these different periods where he did like a
blue
period and he did a pink period or a rose period or whatever, cubism, he did all this different stuff. Magic, because every year they shift the style guide and with every setting they shift, like you were saying, light to dark or, you know, Lorwyn-esque to New Phyrexia. But the artists, they don't change, right? So they're in every set. So they're kind of forced to change their style with the style guide. And it's kind of like forcing them to have these different periods, like a dark period or a more digital looking type painting, or like, hey, now we want you to be really traditional, or we want you to be, you know, really bright and colorful or whatever. So it's just, it's interesting to go back and look at, you know, go into like Gatherer and just search by artist and see how they've kind of evolved over time as they've painted through all these different sets.
I mean, your boy Randy Post, RK Post, you can look at his angels over the years and you can see how different they look.
Right.
And some of that is personal changes, personal style,
right.
And some of it is, you know, I don't want it to look too similar to this because cards can get confused. Can you add a sheen? Can you church it up a little bit in the digital side after the fact? And, you know, sometimes when you do it so often, it's just easier to do sketch on paper, scan it in, and then digitize it from there. So Spectrum 21, topic of the day, huge deal, great book, about 20 artworks in there. I wrote a little article on it on Gathering Magic. But I'm really curious about what people often think is the best art. Because in any of these guides, a lot of it is subjective. It is chosen by people. And there's always a piece or two that I disagree about. This would be like, oh, why is that in there? Or how the hell is this thing left out?
Right.
But that doesn't happen that much anymore. And instead it's, oh, we'll celebrate all the artworks. Instead of saying, I have a best worst list. Top 10, 10 worst. But I've noticed the top 5 worst or top 5 misses doesn't really get written about anymore. There are no odd commissions anymore. There is no terrible out-of-place art anymore. There's awkward, or, you know, this ruins the storyline with Deicide, but there is none of that ranking anymore. It's more
what
self.
What are your favorites?
It's who do you like? What artist do you want? Do you want to see a Therese Nielsen? Do you want to see 10 of them? Some people are into that. But I'm wondering, that only happens with art. Why doesn't that happen with flavor text, Ant? Why don't we get that?
Well, we do. I mean, we do have some people who go in and they comment on, you know, what their top flavor texts are. But I think part of it is, so the people who want to write those articles the most are the flavor text writers, and we're not supposed to. I would love to look at every set and say, hey, these are all the flavor texts that I think were done right, and these are ones that I would change or ones I think are done wrong. But when we're writing on the set, we're all writing as a team, so it's not an individual thing as like art is. You, like, as an artist, you get a card, it's for
right.
you paint it. If you screw it up, hey,
yep.
we can come to you and say, why did you screw this up? But
yep.
flavor text is not handled that way. It's much more of a team effort. So for me to come in and say, oh, I don't like that they picked this one flavor text and blah 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 blah, like that's it's going against that team aspect. So
I submitted this one and I think it's better.
Yeah, I think
why
mine
didn't
is
you pick
better.
That
why
one?
Didn't you pick me? And like,
yeah.
oh, whatever. Right. You know what I mean? It's not. It's just a different vibe. So I know that John Dale, he does flavor reviews on
Fantasy
Games. So he's one of the ones out there who does it. Again, I would do it, but I'm not supposed to.
Dum-dum-dum.
So one thing that I can do, and one thing that I plan on doing, is once the submissions that I have sent in, once they've become public and they're out to the public, I can go in and look at the ones that I personally got accepted and talk about maybe like my thought process behind them and why I wrote certain things that I did and like what I was thinking here and there.
That sounds nice.
Because it's my own work, and I can critique my own stuff, and I can say, hey, I feel like I shot the pooch here, and I screwed this one up. Nice. Like, I'll take one for the team and say, you know, this could have been better. I should have done this. Whatever.
Should have churched this one up, sure.
Right.
I used a trope too much here. Or
yeah.
There's too much humor. This is stupid.
I got ham-fisted on this one.
Right.
Whatever. But that, again, I mean, that's me looking at my own work constructively, so...
Right. Well, I mean, do you see tropes in flavor?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's the first person view of like, you know, what's going on, or there's like the comedic relief of trying to you're trying to make a pun without it just being a pun. You know, like there's definitely different avenues that you can take.
Right.
But it's tricky because, you know, like I was saying, I think we were talking about this in the last episode, that, you know, part of it is really you're trying to meld, you know, and fill the gap between what the art's trying to do and what the card mechanics are trying to do. So some of the time you kind of get forced into the trope that already exists for the card. Like if the card is playing up being a gentle giant, your flavor text is going to be forced into this, like, it better sound like a gentle giant, or it's going to stand out like a sore thumb.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, but so that can like enhance it though too. I mean, you get to see a perspective like, oh, I get it, it's a gentle giant, but at the same time, is he suffering from that? Is he forced to be so? Is he happy there? Is he satisfied? I mean, you know, those things are limitless.
And that's those are the things that are. That was, for me, that's the fun part, I think, of writing flavor, is especially when you get a card that, like, I, for one, white is my least favorite color to play, and I resonate with it the least. So
really?
Going into it, I was really worried about having to write for white cards, because I'm like, I'll write red all day. I'll be crazy and chaotic and in your face all day. Mm-hmm. But when I gotta write stuff about, like, oh, you know, I'm a law major, blah, 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 like, I struggle in that space. So when I would get those cards, it was easier for me to cheat and maybe quote a red mage talking about the white card. Like, that's an easy cheat for me to do.
Right.
Where I tried to help, you know, force myself to grow as a writer is I would look at the art and say, okay, this person exists on a white card. So what is their mentality and what are they thinking? Like, are they... like what you're saying, are they upset? Are they happy to be doing what they're doing? And from there, you can kind of craft a narrative, but...
Oh, white's super easy. You just think evil. Evil is white fascists, and no one ever thinks of white as evil, and then you work from there.
You can, and that's another easy way out.
I always like going, like, what would the good guy say? What would the evil guy say? And it's always tough to say, well, green doesn't have good or evil. Everything is just nature. It's like, no. There's definitely good guys and bad guys.
Right.
And the analog is art has this too. I mean, there's definite rules and things you can lean on. And if you go through any of these, you know, art books or, you know, best art things of the year, you'll definitely find things that repeat themselves over and over and over and over again. And the best way to do so is look at the visual cues, because the card art is so small. It's, you know, 2 inches by 3 inches, so they have to show a lot of information and give you clues to do so. It was the same thing as when they used, you know, a white bird to show the Holy Spirit back in the medieval times, because it was just too difficult to convey, like, what this thing was. They just showed a bird, and people were like, oh, okay, I get what that is.
Bird with a halo.
Yeah, bird with a halo, and, you know, it's like bird sitting on a blue cloth. Oh, I see. This is Holy Spirit imbibing into the mother of Jesus. But they could do it so much faster. And that crap's happened forever. And it happens in magic in weird little ways, like scale birds, maybe, or the Ach Hans trope.
What do you mean by scale birds is a trope? How is that?
Okay, so scale birds. You've seen scale birds to show, like, on a Colossus to show you how big the frickin' thing is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But what happens? What do you do when they're underwater?
Scale sharks.
Exactly.
We've seen this on Krakens. Come on.
We do.
Steve Belden has those in, what is that, Shipbreaker Kraken? He has, like, the sharks and whales that are, like, coming up in its wake. And you look at that thing, and, like, the first thing you think is that ship is totally screwed. But then you're like, oh, that poor shark is going to just get displaced.
It's the Deluge Kraken, or known as Scourge of Fleets. You can look in the art, and on the base of the mouth, you can see shadows of sharks to see how big this frickin' thing is. Right. And these things are used, you know, scale birds if they're in the air. If they're on the ground, you might see a deer to show scale, or
Human running away, something like
hapless
that.
Hapless human.
One thing that I like that they do, normally when the thing's on the ground, a lot of times they'll do a perspective shift, and it'll be from the point of view of somebody on the ground. Like,
right.
Looking up at the thing, so it kind of conveys scale that way. So I guess that would be another trope. Right?
That's another one. It's if the person's running, it's the Ach Hans, and that's the person running in front of the thing, trying to get away from it, and that comes from the Lurgoyf story in one of the anthology books, and it talked about the Lurgoyf and Safi, Eric's daughter, saying, "Ach, Hans, run, it's the Lurgoyf," and they finally wrote a story about it, and then after the fact, in Time Spiral, they made Safi, Eric's daughter, and she, you know, sacrifices herself to save Hans and so on. And then they made a play on Hans in the Unhinged set, Hans Run. And
well,
then
the Safi one, actually, now that you bring that up, that's kind of the reverse of that trope.
It is the reverse.
Instead, it's from the point of view of the monster. And,
correct.
And you see Safi looking over her. So that's actually kind of, I never even thought of it that way, but that's, I like that art so much more now.
Yeah, instead it's like, whoa, this woman's running, who cares? She's
yeah,
got tight leather.
Eat her.
she's got like tight leather pants on, who gives a crap? It's like, well, no, there's actually this full background story. And that was what made Time Spiral so fun for some of us to see the art and understand what was going on. But if you didn't know that, it's, I don't understand, why is this 2-2? This is dumb. I don't understand.
Now, do you know, is that something that, like, when they're going in each set, right, and they're putting out the style guide, are there certain tropes that they ask artists to use? Because I know, like, in Innistrad, they tried to do a lot of first-person stuff. To convey that feeling of, like, fear for you.
Yeah, they do some of that. The Innistrad was to be looked at eye level or upward. You're supposed to look up because of vampires and mountains and werewolves. So it made it feel like things were coming in on you. For Theros, you'll notice that people have a really sculpted quality where you're seeing them, the contrapasto, but you're seeing eye to eye with them, almost like they're engaging you in whether it's a discussion or a debate or
making you feel equal to the hero on the card.
That's where they're just one of many, and you have a fighting chance instead of, oh, this giant monster is going to crush me. And those sort of things, they're not quite tropes because they're not used terribly often outside a set, but those things are really, really conveyed, and they fight that at sketch stage to say, you know, this perspective shift of waste not looking up down at the person doesn't really fit with the cohesiveness of the rest of the set.
Right.
Could you give me a sketch that has this, you know, more eye level? Because that would be more fitting for the rest.
So is there one for cons?
Cons, I don't know. I'd have to look at the art a little closer when the second set comes out. But when the second set comes out, you can pick it up immediately because you have more comparative things to go through. The biggest thing you'd have to look at are small flying creatures like 1/1 flyers,
right,
and 2/2 bears, especially in green.
Thinking about it right now, a lot of the cons cards, they're all moving. Like, every one of them seems like no one on that plane sits still. Like, every one of them is constantly fighting or running or charging or doing something.
They're off to fight. I mean, it's supposed to be warriors at all times and, you know, getting after it. There is no peace and serenity of sorts. And magic very rarely, it struggles often to show family life, loving, you know, loving each other, helping out your neighbor, those sort of things.
Except so, Crib Swap.
Except Crib Swap. That is a strange one, isn't it?
That's family life, kind of.
Getting the changeling in there.
Kidnapping.
And, you know, I would love to think more people would write about this. So I don't know, maybe we could put a link in for the TV tropes. So TV tropes is where they document all these tropes that happen all the time and people notice. There's one for Magic the Gathering, and there's actually very little written about the flavor and the art, but there's full sections where people could. So maybe we'll try to put that in below the episode that people can look at it a little bit. And
right now it's mostly just like it's mostly comedy stuff. It's like the comedy aspects of Magic.
Yeah, the meta humor that kind of sneaks in there, like the word mize, which is still so difficult to explain to a non-player what that means.
Right. I'm not even going to try.
I'm not even going to get there. But I do know the original art Mark Rosewater actually owns. I found that.
Oh, yeah, by Matt Cavada, right?
Yeah.
I loved when they were talking to him about that, because it's such a hard thing to explain, and they knew that Matt is a player, so he knew what Mize was. So they just sent him for the art description. They were just like, Matt, you're painting Mize.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay.
Okay, I got it. It's just hilarious. So, I mean, I hope we've dug in a little bit about Spectrum. There are other art books, no doubt about it. There are other ways that we can categorize what is considered fantastic and exemplary examples, but this is the big one. This is by far the one that matters Magic the most, without a doubt.
And if any of you out there are looking for a great Christmas gift to get your fellow Vorthos, this book would be it.
Yeah, we don't get Magic art books, so if you want a coffee table book, it's not real expensive. I mean, they're pretty cheap. You can find them in any bookstore, but, you know, can't beat Amazon pricing with these. They're silly cheap. And I've never seen someone that had them give them away. Really, people hold on to them. And you can find them at some secondhand bookstores if you're in a bigger city.
Next time, we're going to have to do a Flavor Text episode so that I can talk the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to that, because I'm aware of what it is. Man, am I bad at it. I'll even share which ones that I submitted, and they're bad.
I really want the set that I worked on to come out so badly, because I feel like I would be so much more helpful in a Flavor Text episode if I could talk about some Flavor Text that I wrote.
Oh, well, that's how I do. Welcome to non-disclosure agreements. Right. There you go.
Jesus, living in the future sucks.
Cripes. No, we'll do that. It'll be a fun episode. So we'll gather some flavorful questions, maybe on the Twitter, and we'll shake those out.
Definitely.
Well, for that, I mean, if you want to get a hold of us, shake out some questions. We'll put it out there. You can find me, Mike Linneman, at Vorthos Mike on the Twitters, and I write every Wednesday for Gathering Magic. You can drop me a note there.
And I am at AntMTG on Twitter. I also write for Gathering Magic, so you can put in a comment in, or on the show notes, you can feel free to comment as well. And something that I also have forgotten to mention in the past two episodes is that Snack Time also has its own Twitter. It's at Snack Time Cast. If you ever have any questions or comments or suggestions, feel free to send those along.
To the Snack Time. We need to give away snacks at, like, a tournament.
Oh, we should give away snacks.
Right? Like, give away, like, zebra cakes? Can you imagine?
Or Twinkies?
Oh, man! Like, can you imagine how popular that'd be? It's just like, hey, man, you want to take my business card?
Yeah,
like, no, I'm going to put
a Snack Time sticker on that.
Yeah. On a snack!
I'm handing those out at PAX East.
That's so going to die! That's amazing.
That's perfect.
Oh, my God, I got to find a new bag that carries snacks.
Oh, dude, you just get a book bag.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get that started. Anyway, thanks for coming. Had a great time, and we'll get some snacks.